the book of 1 John, chapter 2. We looked at verses 7 through 11 and some other verses that introduce the subject of the Christian life is a life of love, which is contrary to selfishness, and that's what I'll be preaching on this evening also, is selfishness. But in 1 John chapter 2, let's begin reading verse 7. Brethren, I write no new commandment unto you, but an old commandment which ye had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which ye heard from the beginning. Again, a new commandment I write unto you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is past, and the true light now shineth. He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness even until now. Notice it doesn't say probably is in darkness. He is in darkness. But he that loveth his brother abideth in light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness, walketh in darkness, knoweth not whither he goeth, because that darkness hath blinded his eyes. We saw last week that we are to love one another with the same kind of love that Christ has for us. We see this in John chapter 13 and also in John chapter 15. We, of course, cannot love to the same degree that Christ loves, but we can have the same kind, or in other words, his love is the pattern of our love. We're to pattern our love after his. The problem today is so many are trying to pattern love for one another after the world's pattern. And the world's pattern really has absolutely nothing to do with love. So we have to pattern our love after Christ's love. And we ended last Sunday morning by reading 1 Corinthians 13. We have the nature and character of brotherly love very well described in these verses. We'd like to go back there. Beginning with verse 4 through verse 8, we have a description of Christian love, or this again, this would be the love that would be patterned after Christ's love. And this is how we put our love to the test. This is how we examine our love. And we do need to examine every now and then our love for one another. What is it that causes us to love someone? In most cases, you will find out that most of our love is self-centered love or selfish love, and I suppose it all is to some degree. But begin reading verse 4. It says, love suffereth long. That, of course, speaks of slowness to anger. Doesn't mean that love never gets angry. That's the idea that many have. If you get angry, well, then that's not love. No, it's long-suffering. That means it's not quick to get angry. If someone is always quickly angered at you, that's not love. Love suffereth long. There's forbearance. In other words, love puts up with some things. There's forbearance when we are tried. There's forbearance when we are wronged. Love causes us to put up with a certain amount of things. A lot of people have the attitude, well, I'm not putting up with anything. Well, you would if you loved, because love does forbear a certain amount. And love is not quick to take offense. A lot of people are very quick to take offense, especially in a society in which we live. We live in a very sensitive society, and the reason for that is self-centeredness. The reason for that is selfishness. People are offended at almost anything today. But love is not quick to take offense. It doesn't mean that we can't be offended. There are things that ought to offend us. But love is not quick to take offense. Love is not looking for something, and that's what a lot of folks are doing today. They're looking for something to get mad about. They're looking for something to be hurt about. They're looking for something to be offended by. And again, just like anything else, if you go looking for that, you're going going to find it, and if you don't find it, you'll imagine it. So either way, that person gets offended. But love is not quick to take offense. Love has the ability to bear much, and love is always ready to forgive. That goes along with the fact that it suffereth long. Love is always ready to forgive. Love wants to forgive. Again, before we can forgive, there has to be repentance. But love is ready. Love is always ready for forgiveness. And again, love suffereth long. This is opposed to haste and becoming angry or irritable. We see also that love is kind. That means it's good-natured. Again, on all these definitions, love goes beyond self. It's kind, it's good-natured, it's gentle, it's affectionate. Kind means courteous also. That is, love does not mistreat. Love is polite. That's part of being kind. Being kind is to be useful. If you're kind to someone, you are being of some use to that person's needs or that person's situation. So love is useful. And love is serving. Again, if you're kind, you do acts of service to others. Love is gracious. Love is kind. Love is gracious. We see it has no desire for revenge. Love doesn't want revenge. Love would rather forgive. And we see to be kind means that you desire that good happens to someone else. You don't wish bad on someone. That's included also in our prayers. I believe we can pray that the Lord would not give someone rest in order for them to get their heart right. But the goal is for them to get right. And you're praying for the good. But to pray that the Lord wouldn't give them rest just to so you can watch someone suffer, now that's wrong kind of praying. And again, you'd better be careful if you know, a lot of times people pray, Lord, just let them have it. Well, then you better, if you want to pray that way, then when you get out of line, people need to pray the same thing. Lord, just let them have it. We need to pray, Lord, be merciful to them. Lord, bring them back. And whatever it takes. But love is kind. It doesn't desire to see harm fall upon the one that loves. So love is kind, which basically means it's active goodwill. Love does good to others and desires good for others. We see also that love envieth not. Now again, jealousy, envy implies selfishness. When someone says, I'm a very jealous person, what you've just said is, I'm a very selfish person. Jealousy and selfishness, you cannot separate the two. So there's it envieth not, so it does away with jealousy. It rises above the spirit of jealousy. It rises above the spirit of selfishness, and it desires to see others honored and esteemed. When someone else is honored, when someone else is blessed of God, you don't become jealous. Instead, you thank the Lord. You may think, well, that person doesn't deserve that. Who does? Nobody does. You thank the Lord for His mercy toward that individual. But when we get jealous because God blessed someone else, what are we saying? We're saying, Lord, I deserve that more than they did. And you've done wrong by giving it to them. You should have given it to me. And that's an awful lot of pride. And we see that love doesn't think that way. Love just thanks the Lord for God being merciful to them. We see love also vaunteth not itself. This is a inward feeling. It's an inward feeling of superiority over others. And this is something we have to guard against. You and I that have been shown some truths, to our human nature, it's very easy for us to begin to think that we're superior in this area to someone else, that we're more intelligent than someone else. But love doesn't feel any superiority over others. And again, if there's a feeling of superiority, there's also a feeling of contempt and disregard for others. Whenever someone feels superior over someone else, you automatically have contempt for that person. And you automatically disregard that person, which again goes against everything we've said so far. Going along with that, it says love is not puffed up. And I believe that expresses it's the expression of a feeling of superiority. Love doesn't have the feeling of superiority, nor does love express a feeling of superiority. In other words, love does not feel superior, and love does not act superior. Love is meek. Love is humble. We see, sixthly, love doth not behave itself unseemly. That which is unseemly is improper and disgraceful. Love is not shown by committing fornication or adultery. Love doth not behave itself in an improper way. Adultery and fornication is selfish, plain and simple. But love does not do that which is unseemly. Love does not want to do that which is improper. If you love somebody, you do not want them to do what's improper. You do not want them to do what is going to harm them in any way. So when someone says, well, if you love me, you'll do such and such, that's wrong. That's not love. That is improper. And love is not unseemly. It doesn't do that which is disgraceful. In other words, it turning that around, it seeks that which is proper or becoming. Love will not ask, love will not demand your spouse to do something that's wrong. That's not love. That's selfishness. When a husband demands that his wife do something that's wrong or vice versa, that's not love. If you love me, you'll do such and such, they'll say. No, if you loved me, you wouldn't ask me to do such and such, because love does not do that which is improper, but it wants that which is becoming in all circumstances, in all relations, which goes along with the fact that love shows respect and proper regard for others. If love doth not behave itself unseemly, that is, in a disrespectful way or in a way that shows disregard to someone else, love is just the opposite. Love shows respect. Love shows regard for others. So in other words, love will avoid the profane. Love will avoid that which is not decent. And love cares about others. And love always acts in a proper way or in a mannerly way. Love is not based upon physical attraction, physical touch. Again, these things can be improper, and love wants that which is right. Love wants to treat the person that's loved with respect. We see also, love seeketh not her own, which I believe sums up everything. That is the best definition of love. Nothing more accurately describes love than that phrase. Love seeketh not her own. And this is what Paul talked about in Romans 15, verses 1 through 3. It's what he talked about in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4, that love thinks of others. Love does not first think of itself. Love thinks first, of course, of God and then of others. We see love is not easily provoked, which goes back to the fact that love is not easily aroused to anger, does not give way to anger. When one is under the influence of love, they do not give way to sudden outbursts of anger. It's not easily provoked. Doesn't mean that we can't be provoked, but it's not easily provoked. If you and I are provoked to show anger, it ought to take a while for us to get there. It shouldn't just be boom, just like that. It things have had to build up for a while to get there. Again, love is not easily provoked. Love thinketh no evil. Love thinketh no evil. In other words, love tries to put the best construction on the motives and conduct of others. That is, you see somebody do something, you don't immediately think, what are they up to? You don't immediately assume that they're up to no good. Now, you may have facts that lead you to believe that way. That's something different. But love does, what I'm saying is, love doesn't go there without a reason, without a past history. So love does not automatically, immediately think that someone is up to no good. It doesn't immediately put a bad motive, a bad construction upon the act of another without facts. Without facts. Now, if you have facts, then don't be foolish and disregard facts. If you have past history, a repeated past history of someone's actions, don't be foolish and overlook that past history. But don't immediately just jump in and assume that someone is doing wrong and put a bad construction upon what they're doing without any facts whatsoever. Love doesn't do that. Love thinketh no evil. Love rejoiceth not in iniquity, which goes back to love does not behave itself unseemly. That is, love doesn't delight and find pleasure in sin when someone does wrong. Love doesn't have any pleasure in bringing someone down. Why is it today when people get away from God, they never want to go away from God by themselves? They always want to bring someone with them because they're selfish. It's because they're selfish. It all goes back to self. And that's why you have to watch the backslider, because I guarantee you, they're looking for folks to bring down with them. That's the way they operate. But love does not rejoice in iniquity. Love doesn't desire. If you and I fall, we don't want to bring anyone else with us. Let us fall by ourselves, if that's possible. But love rejoiceth not in iniquity. It also means that love does not find delight or pleasure in seeing a fault in someone else. If you see someone that you love and you just discover that this person has this fault. I mean, you were unaware of it before, but now it's right there. You just discover this person has this fault. Love doesn't rejoice in that. Love is saddened by that. Just the same, if you hear that a brother or sister has fallen into sin, you don't rejoice in that. Instead, you grieve over that. That's what love does. Love doesn't approve of sin, but love grieves over sin. Today, people want us to approve of their behavior in the name of love. That's not what love does. Love grieves over sin, and love can't approve of that which God disapproves of. So love does not find pleasure, does not find any delight when we discover that brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so has this sin in their life, they have this fault in their life, they have this flaw in their life, and we all do. We don't rejoice in that. We find no pleasure in that whatsoever. At the same time, we don't find, love does not find pleasure in the report that someone has fallen into sin. And there's a lot of joy today in the news that someone has fallen. I mean, people get some delight in that. But that's not love. Love doesn't find any pleasure in the report that someone else has fallen into sin. That's why today, if you fall into sin, I guarantee you phones will be ringing. If you do something right, probably no one's going to call and tell anybody else. But if you do wrong, they're going to get on the phone, they're going to tell folks, because that's a lack of love. And I believe the reason people do that is because it makes them feel better about themselves, which goes back to selfishness. And if you see or hear that someone else has sinned, immediately you think, well, at least I'm not that bad. I haven't done that. Love rejoices in the truth, which stands opposed to iniquity here in the context. That is, love doesn't find pleasure in sin, but love does find pleasure in the virtues of others. Finds pleasure in the purity of others. Finds pleasure when someone does what's right, when someone does that which is pleasing to God. Love delights in that. Love finds pleasure in that. Love beareth all things. And I believe that means that love would rather hide and conceal the errors and faults of others. Again, here in the context, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth. Beareth all things. That is, love does not just blaze abroad the errors and faults of others. Now, if you have to, if there's a reason to tell others, and sometimes there is, then that needs to be done. But many times there's no reason for it. We see also love believeth all things with regard to the conduct of others. Love is prone, again, to put the best construction, not the worst. We've already seen that love does not automatically put the worst construction on the actions of others, but instead love tends to put the best construction upon the conduct of others. That doesn't mean that love makes no discrimination in regard to things to be believed, love is not prone to believe that which is false. Love wants facts. Love is just not going to believe something because someone said it. Love wants facts. Give me the facts that say that this person has done such and such or whatever. Love hopeth all things. That is, love hopes that all will turn out well concerning those that are loved. Love doesn't take the attitude, well, good, they got what they deserved. Well, again, if you delight in someone getting what they deserve, it looks to me that you ought to delight when you get what you deserve then too. We ought to delight that God shows mercy, because we all deserve the wrath of God. But love hopes that all will turn out well concerning those that are loved. And we see love endureth all things. That means it bears up under all trials. Love can put up with an awful lot. Love can endure many things. Because of the enduring power of love, love will stoop and do things that no other emotion would do. Love can endure trials. Why is it today, as soon as husband and wife begin to have difficulties, the first word out of their mouths is divorce or separation? Well, there's no love there. That's selfish love. We have very little in our country today. We have very little endurance. That's true all the way down the board. I mean, this country today is incapable of fighting a war because we don't have endurance. We don't have what it takes. I mean, if there was a D-Day today, we couldn't handle it. We can't handle those kind of things because we don't endure. And the reason we don't endure is because we don't have commitment. It takes commitment to endure. It's the same with relationships. Relationships fall apart every day. And it's the same reason, because there's no enduring power. And the reason there's no enduring power is because there's no commitment and there's no love. But love endures testings. Love endures afflictions. Love endures tribulations. Love endures temptations. Love endures persecutions. In other words, love simply will not stop. Which brings us to the last point. Love never faileth. Love never faileth. That speaks of the value. That speaks of the value of love. Who can possibly measure the value of love upon the lives of individuals? There are a lot of people today, a lot of children, a lot of people today who have no love in their lives. None. I mean, there's no one to love them. But the individual who has people that love them, you have no idea the value of that love. Who can measure the value of love as far as a church is concerned. When a church is loving, what a value that is. What a benefit, what a blessing that is to the church. So we see the basic nature of love. And we could teach a long, lengthy series on 1 Corinthians 13 here, but that gives us the idea of the nature and the characteristics of the love that John is talking about here in 1 John under the heading of brotherly love. Let's look to the Lord.